Okay, we're going to discuss some common stock characteristics. And I know a little bit of this stuff is tedious and boring, but you have to know it, because you're the expert. So let's get started on slide 61, a stock spin-off. This is the conversion of one of a firm's subsidiaries to a standalone company by the distribution of stock in that new company to existing shareholders. Sometimes the new company is still a majority owned by the company that spun it off. For example, a few years ago, Kraft Foods, the world's second largest food company, was spun off from Altria. Who's Altria? That's Philip Morris. Philip Morris was so big that they owned at one time Kraft, Nabisco, Post Cereal, Miller Brewing, and then they started to divest themselves of those companies. Altria then divested itself of its international tobacco business, which is now called Philip Morris International. So this is an example of how topsy-turvy things have gotten. Philip Morris International is a company based in the United States that does no business in the United States. Indeed, exactly. The history of spin-offs has been checkered. Some spin-offs have done better than the companies that spun them off. Examples of this are the Baby Bell companies that were spun off from AT&T in 1984. They did better than AT&T, to the point where one of the Baby Bells, SBC, wound up buying the old AT&T. Some spin-offs have not fared so well. Coca-Cola Enterprises is the bottling arm of Coca-Cola, and that was spun off from Coca-Cola, and that hasn't done that well. And Lucent Technologies was spun off from AT&T, and that almost went bankrupt. Lucent Technologies used to be known as Bell Labs, Western Electric. That was the company, the consortium of companies that built the equipment for AT&T. And they made, not that they don't make the best telephone equipment in the world, they do. They made some very boneheaded maneuvers in the late 1990s during the tech runoff that we'll discuss later on when we get to earnings, analyzing earnings. Sometimes when companies are spun off, investors are very excited because management believes that the company can do better on its own than if it were still inside the corporate entity. But as we saw, it's not always the case. So you have to be careful. Slide 62, a stock split. This is an accounting maneuver in which a company increases the number of shares outstanding by exchanging a specified number of new shares of stock for each outstanding share. And the most typical is a 2-for-1 split. So you had 100 shares, and you now have 200 shares. Yippee! Whoopee! Big deal. The price dropped in half. The price went from 20 down to 10. You see, they can't create value out of thin air. It doesn't work that way. There was a technological reason for splitting your stock, but that's gone now because of the internet and the technology. By keeping the price low, splitting the stock, it was easier to have 100 share increments. Remember the round lots? But that reason is gone now. There are 3-for-1 splits, 3-for-2 splits, 1-for-5 splits. That's called a reverse split, where you had 5 shares, now you have 1. And let's read at the bottom. It's very important. There is no increased value from stock splits. If you had 1 share at 20, now you have 2 shares at 10, the value is still $20. It is a psychological increase at best. Warren Buffett of Berkshire Hathaway, you've heard of Mr. Buffett, since its inception has refused to split his stock. And a single share now goes for $225,000. But if you were to go back in time and watch what would have happened to Coca-Cola or McDonald's or GE or Johnson & Johnson, if they had never split the shares, split the stock, you would have seen that these companies would now be selling for $100 or $200 or whatever, $1,000. There's a wonderful, I got to find that article, put that, I got to make a mental note to do that. A woman who started working at Abbott Laboratories. Well, you've probably not heard of them, but they're very, very big and important company. When you go to the doctors and have some blood taken, their chances are it's being analyzed by Abbott Labs. She bought 3 shares as a secretary and worked there all her life. And when she passed away, those 3 shares had split many times and were worth $1.3 million. Indeed. But the reason, the technological reason for splitting, as we said, is gone. So you're finding more and more companies that are not splitting their shares and just letting the price rise. Sometimes you'll see a company split their shares as a way to tell the general public that they think the near-term future looks promising. But they don't have to say that, because if they say that it doesn't happen, then they can get sued. But they might split their shares as a way of saying, hey, we think things are going to do well. That's what I thought. I saw Qualcomm about 10 years ago, split their shares, and I thought, what are they doing this for? And it turns out they were doing it in anticipation of some very, very good news, and the price did do very well after that. But again, there's no increased value other than psychological, that you have more shares, and maybe they're trying to tell you something. Maybe, maybe not. Slide 63, Treasury stock. These are shares of stock that have been sold and subsequently repurchased by the issuing firm, taken out of circulation. They're called share buybacks or just buybacks. They reduce the number of outstanding shares. And what's the logic behind this? Well, after the buyback, there is less supply of outstanding stock. And you students of economics will know that what happens if the demand doesn't change and the supply is reduced? Exactly, the price should go up. It's not a guarantee. But existing shareholders now have a larger percentage ownership of the corporation. During the run-up of the 1990s, share buybacks were often seen as a better alternative to dividend increases. The belief was that investors were more interested in capital gains than they were dividends, and that buybacks increased the potential for capital gains by reducing the supply of stock. Now, I tend to look at companies that do buybacks and say, when are they buying it back? Are they buying it back when the price is high? Or are they buying it back when the price is low? Because if they're smart, what will they do? Right, they'll buy it back when the price is low. After the 1987 drop of 22.6% in one day, the next day, companies bought back their shares like crazy. Why? Because they saw a very good opportunity. The CEO said to his chief financial officer, hey, Fred! Hey, are we going bankrupt? No, JR. Last year was great. This year's going to be better. We got tons of cash. We're doing fine. We're not going bankrupt. Oh, good. I want you to go out there and buy 100,000 of our shares and put them in the treasury. Okay, JR. And that's exactly what happened. So watch for companies that are buying back their shares when the price is low, because they're the smart ones. Slide 64. Different companies will have different classifications of common stock. These are common stocks that are issued by a company in different classes, each of which offers different privileges and benefits to its holder. Often you will see a Class A that everybody gets to use and buy, and the Class B is held by the family. It may or may not have more or less voting shares. It may get a better dividend because the family just wants to live off the dividends. So they have different privileges, different benefits. You remember Warren Buffett of Berkshire Hathaway? The Class A shares are the original shares. and recall that they're selling for, what, $225,000 now? In 1996, the financial world pressed Warren Buffett to offer a lower-cost version of his stock. He didn't want to do it, but he did. And the Class B shares initially sold for around $1,100, $1,160. And in the prospectus for the new issue of the Class B shares, he said that he wouldn't buy them. He said, no, buy these. Buy the A shares. If you can't afford the A shares, you shouldn't be buying Berkshire Hathaway. He's a bit of a curmudgeon. But it turned out that the Class B shares came in very handy when Mr. Buffett wanted to buy other companies. He could use the B shares as a cash. And they split them 50 for one. The price went down, I think, to about $80. I don't remember exactly. And now they sell for around $151. So he uses the Class B shares when he wants to buy another company, and he issues he pays for the company in Class B shares. So it turned out for the best for Mr. Warren Buffett, which is often the case. Slide 65. A few other common stock values that may be important, may not be important. Well, the first one's not important at all. It's called the par value, and I still haven't figured out what this is all about. But it's the stated or face value of a stock. It might be a dollar, it might be a penny. I don't understand why they do it. The book value, though, and the market value are important. The market value is you look up the market value on the internet or call your broker or whatever. That's what it's selling for. But the book value is an accounting number. And we all know accountants are very, very persnickety about certain things. We take the assets of the firm, subtract the liabilities and preferred stock, which we'll take a look at later on in the semester, hybrid securities, and put it on a per share basis, and that's the book value. And you're going to look that up, and you're going to find that that's typically much less than the market value, because that's what the company is worth if you were to sell off all the assets, pay off all the liabilities. And most people realize that a company is worth more intact as a going concern, as the IRS calls it, than if you were to split up, break apart the company, liquidate their assets, fire all the employees, pay off the debts, and walk away. But sometimes the company is selling, the market price, the market value, is selling for less than the book value. In which case, indeed, you might have heard of corporate raiders, takeover artists, private equity. That was the company that Mitt Romney worked for, Bain Capital. That's how he made his money before he ran for governor and then president. They would come in in some cases they would not break apart the company, they would try to restructure it and the like. But that's the idea behind book value. Dividends. Oh boy, slide 66. Let's take a look at dividends. Dividends are shares of earnings given, distributed to stockholders. Normally paid quarterly. Now, other countries, it might be semi-annually or annually, but companies who are in countries that have something to do in the past with the United Kingdom typically pay every quarter. So the United States, Canada, Hong Kong, Australia, South Africa, these companies have a history of paying every 3 months. Outside the United States, every 6 months, once a year. And the board of directors gets together and decides how much, if anything, should be paid in dividends and when to pay them. Dividends, as we see, are usually a percentage of the earnings per share, a very important number, as we will come to notice as we continue on our discussion of stocks. The amount of earnings available, to common stockholders, as stated on a per share basis. So we're going to do a couple of calculations here. The earnings per share example on slide 62, takes a company that reports a net profit of $1 million. Now, that's a lot of money to you and me, right? But to a company, we don't know until we know how many shares are outstanding. So let's say there are 500,000 shares outstanding. If you take $1 million of earnings divided by 500,000, that's $2 earnings per share. The board of directors might decide to pay out 50% of those earnings per share in the form of dividends. So therefore, each shareholder would receive a dollar dividend for each share they owned. And this is called the dividend payout ratio. The company is paying out 50% of their earnings to shareholders in the form of dividends. And this is very, very typical in Europe. They tell you how much they've earned, and they say, we pay out 50%. In the United States, they tend to just continue to increase their earnings and don't rely on a dividend payout ratio. If things go great, then they might increase it a little bit. If things don't go well, then they don't decrease it. In the United States, it's the culture that you just don't decrease your dividend. These are for very large companies, folks. But other companies say, no, we only earn this much, we're going to pay this much. Slide 68, the dividend yield. Very important number, because this measure relates the dividends to the share price and puts stocks dividends on a relative percentage basis rather than an absolute dollar basis. Now, what am I talking about? What are you talking about? It's actually very simple. The previous slide, the stock was paying a dollar dividend. Now, what if it were selling for 20 bucks? Well, you take the dollar dividend, you divide it by $20, and that gives you a 5% dividend yield. It's that simple, folks. It makes it easier to compare stocks with other income-oriented vehicles, such as bonds or savings accounts. Traditionally, as we said, 3 to 6% was normal. In the 1990s, dividends went down to 2%, and then in March of 2000, they hit 1%. In the turmoil of 2008-09, dividends shot above 3% because the price of the stocks went down. And now they're back down to around 2%, which it turns out, as of this presentation, is actually higher than the 10-year Treasury bond, which we discussed in a previous presentation. So these calculations, earnings per share, dividend payout ratio, dividend yield, are really not that difficult. And there's a worksheet, stock worksheet number 2, that I want you to do that goes through these. There's an answer key. Yeah. We would do this in the face-to-face class as we were going along. Slide 69. With regard to dividends, there are some important dates to keep in mind. The declaration date is the date that the board of directors declares the dividend. We are going to pay a dividend of 50 cents a share. Now, they do this several weeks before the date of record. That's the date on which an investor must be a registered shareholder of the firm to be entitled to receive the dividend. In other words, they have to own the shares by that date. But there's a little wrinkle here. 3 days before the date of record is ex-dividend date. Huh? This is the date which determines whether one is actually an official shareholder of a firm and thus eligible to receive the declared dividend. Why is it 3 days before? Relax, we're going to discuss it on the next slide. And then the payment date is the date that the money actually comes into your account. It used to be they send you a check, but it's all electronic now, so you don't get a check anymore. Slide 70. Why is the ex-dividend date 3 days before the date of record? Well, stock transactions close in 3 days. If you purchase a stock, for example, on June 15th, you won't get the stock until June 18th. Theoretically, the opening share price on the ex-dividend date should reflect a drop in price commensurate with the amount of the dividend. What? Well, remember, they're going to pay a dollar or 50 cents. and that's coming out of the pocket of the corporation, so the stock price should drop by that. But that's theoretical, folks. It doesn't work that way. Marketplace is always changing. The prices are always changing all the time, so maybe you'll see a drop commensurate. You like that word, commensurate? With the amount of the dividend. Maybe you won't. Maybe it'll go up. So it's theoretical. Slide number 71. Don't buy the dividend is a common saying in the industry. And what are they trying to get across to you? Translation is, you are often better off waiting until the ex-dividend date before buying the stock. Why? Because dividends are taxable transactions, and if you buy the dividend, you buy the stock just before the ex-dividend date, you'll be responsible for paying the tax, and presumably, theoretically, the stock price will fall commensurate with the amount of the dividend. So, you are better off waiting until after the ex-dividend date so that you will get the stock at a better price and not generate a taxable transaction. I think this is a little silly, folks. How many of us have tens of thousands of dollars that we're going to throw into a stock in one day? Big deal. So you generate a taxable transaction for a few bucks. If you're in that enviable position of having tens of thousands of dollars that you're going to throw into a stock in any one day, then yeah, you might want to take this into consideration. But for most of us, it's not an issue. Don't let it bother you. Slide 72. Very important information on slide 72. Because there are two types of dividends. There are cash dividends. And if you don't understand the second one, don't worry about it. Just know that you want cash dividends. If somebody is offering you stock dividends, you say thank you, but no thank you. Go find some other investment. Because cash dividends don't lie. That's money in your pocket. They used to send you a check. Now it's all electronic. But some companies pay stock dividends. This is a payment of a dividend in the form of additional shares of stock. It's kind of like a stock split. They're issuing more shares. So all else equal, and it never is, stock dividends have no value because they constitute a dilution of ownership. For example, the board of directors declares a 10% stock dividend. So for every 10 shares you own, you'll receive an extra one share. Well, what's going to happen to the price? It's going to drop by 10%. It's like a stock split. But unlike a cash dividend, a stock dividend is not taxed. Well, thank you very much, IRS. It's not worth anything. I'm very glad that you're not taxing me on something that's not worth anything. You would think they'd try, but no, they don't. Now, here's where it starts to get a little tricky. On slide 73, we find that there are dividend reinvestment plans. Now, this should sound familiar because this is how a mutual fund works. These are plans in which shareholders have the cash dividends automatically reinvested back into additional shares of the firm's common stock. Now, these are cash dividends, folks. These are taxable transactions. They are giving you value. But those shares, they were purchased on the open market. The company didn't issue more shares. It did not create a dilution of ownership. They're called DRIPs. What a great name, isn't it? DRIP. Dividend Reinvestment Plan. And most all very large companies have DRIPs. They are an excellent way to own stock for those who are interested in long-term compounded growth and are not interested in current income. It allows the investor to take advantage of compounding automatically with normally no or very, very small transaction costs. Investing in a company like General Electric or Johnson & Johnson in this way is almost like investing in a mutual fund because these companies, these large companies, are so well diversified. Now, how does it work? Well, on the website, this is in the face-to-face, we would show the class this and say you're going to go run to the website now or later. There is an example of a dividend reinvestment plan through Sempra Energy. SDG&E. And this one, the one I think is on there, doesn't show any transaction costs. But every once in a while, they'd hit us with a 3 cents or 9 cents. Because SDG&E was very interested in having people be long-term investors. So they would allow you to buy their shares for virtually no cost. I mean, it's 9 cents. I mean, what is it? The problem with DRIPS is you wind up, if you do one through each individual company and you have 18 companies and you have 18 different statements, so it can get a little unwieldy from an accounting standpoint. But then there are companies that will put them all together for you and make life a little bit easier. They'll charge you a fee, of course, but I'm a big fan of dividend reinvestment plans. Yeah, you think I like dividends. I hope you're getting that idea. Slide number 74, price to earnings ratio. Well, we've already discussed this guy back in chapter 4, and you didn't understand what we were talking about, and you won't understand today. But we're going to come back to him again and again and again, because this is the most popular, most watched stock market and stock valuation statistic. And it's actually very simple. You just take the price and you divide it by the earnings. Hence, you see it written as P/, the divide symbol, E, and also PE. It's the price of the stock divided by the earnings per share. So it's a ratio, it's a quotient, it's very simple to calculate. So if we go back to that company that was selling for $20 and had a $2 of earnings per share, we would take $20 divided by $2, $20 price divided by $2 of earnings per share, and we'd get a PE of 10. Now, traditionally, stocks sold for PE ratios of 5 to 14, and 20 was or above was only reserved for the fastest growing stocks. But for many years, especially in the 1980s and 1990s, a PE of 20 was not unusual. And in the late 90s, PEs of hundreds were just very typical. It got insane. In the 2008 turmoil, PE ratios came down greatly. Why? Because the prices came down greatly. We will spend a great deal of time learning about price to earnings ratio and other valuation techniques in the next few chapters. But for now, all you have to understand is what's on that worksheet where we do the calculations that are associated with this individual presentation. Okay? All right. So in our next presentation, we will discuss different types of stocks and investment strategies and market capitalization. See you in our next presentation on stocks. Oh, by the way, go back over and make sure you understand this. Yes, I know it's a little tedious, it's a little boring, but you have to know it. You're the expert for your family and friends and coworkers, and you can't let them down, right? Of course, right.